All right, so I realized a couple weeks ago that I'm that guy. There's a lot of that guys. It's never good if you're that guy. You never want to be that guy. You never say, you know, he's that guy who, like, is the coolest guy ever. No, that guy is always something bad. So, like, already I'm that guy who cooked fish in the office microwave. I've done that, right? Apparently you're not supposed to do that. I didn't know that, but seriously, the way that people were responding in the office, it was like I individually went to their desks and dropped a dead fish on them or something. Like, that's how much people were upset at me after I cooked fish in the microwave. All right. But that's not the that guy I'm worried about right now. I have to come to terms with this. I am that guy who has a gym membership and never uses it. I had to come face to face with this. It's really, I mean, I've always struggled with it, but it's been particularly acute since I had a child. So since January, unfortunately, LA Fitness, you can go onto their website and you can actually check how often you've logged in. I've logged in a grand total of one time since January. One, all right? The power of one only goes so far, okay? It doesn't apply to gym attendance. It just doesn't. So I am that guy. I'm that guy who has a gym membership and I never use it. Okay, so maybe you remember this. See, now I can do everything on my app, right? I have a gym app, and so I can check in the gym with my app. But it used to be that if you wanted to check into the gym, you would have this little tag that you put on your keychain. Anyone remember those little tags you put on your keychain, right? If you were hanging out with someone and they put their keys on the table or something like that and you saw that little tag, you're like, oh, you're a gym person. Yeah, so if I still had that tag, I'd totally be the person whose keys say I belong to the gym, but my life suggests something different, right? See, in order to actually benefit from my gym membership, there are some things I need to do. I can't just have the membership. The membership by itself is completely ineffective. Really, what needs to happen is I need to put the effort into it to make that membership work. It could be a great tool. By itself, it has very little power. Now, one of the things I've observed over the last several years is that this can possibly apply even to a Christian community. That we can say a Christian community is important to us and yet put zero effort into it whatsoever. And it can be pretty amazing, actually, how quickly that Christian community can lose its power and effectiveness when there's no effort put in whatsoever. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not talking about our salvation, because some of you are probably thinking, like, this sounds like you have to work to earn your salvation with God. I'm not saying that. God gave us salvation freely, and we are His. He paid that price for us. But He chose to work through human history through the church, through communities of Christians working together. And there's something about being a Christian community that actually requires effort for it to have that transformative power that we see promised in the gospel. God's Spirit moves before us and does the heavy lifting, but we have a responsibility to stand beside that, invest our lives fully into this movement that we call the church, and that is how the church begins to change the world. But if we put zero effort into it, well, then belonging to a Christian community or even belonging to a church is a little bit like having that gym tag. And by itself, it becomes hollow. So this morning, we're going to talk about a topic that I know can be sometimes difficult to talk about, but I believe it is absolutely essential to our understanding of what a Christian community does together. That without a good understanding of this topic, we're not going to see Christian community really live up to its gospel potential. And so that is why, and I actually asked for this topic, I want to talk this morning about generosity. About generosity. Because when we understand what generosity is and how we can enter into it, we can get a sense of what Christian community could actually be like. So this morning we're going to challenge maybe a couple things. We're going to talk about some things in slightly different ways, but I'm hopeful that we can kind of get there together. And so here's what I want to do to start us out. To begin, I want to start to unpack a definition of generosity. I want us to kind of figure out what actually we mean when we say this word. So I have a very specific definition that I have in mind, and so I've represented it with a whole bunch of blanks. So right now you don't know what my definition is, but we're gonna unfold it as we go. Because I think there's a couple key parts to our understanding of what generosity is. And so one of the first things I want to direct your attention to is actually a verse that we talked about several weeks ago. We talked about Mark chapter 12, and this is one of those like fundamental verses to the Christian faith. And so it goes like this, Mark chapter 12, verses 30 to 31. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. Jesus was asked what the greatest commandments are. Now remember, the Old Testament is full of commandments, so there was a lot that he could have chosen. And Jesus settles on these two, which are basically love God and love others. And the reason we talked about this a couple weeks ago is because we were actually talking about our mission statement as a church, which involves these love God and love others things. So I'm going to put our mission statement back up there for you really quick, which is formed in Christ for the sake of others and the glory of God. It's the greatest commandment. And the second one, love God, love others. This is absolutely essential to who we are. And so love is going to become part of our definition of generosity. And so I'm going to throw it up there here in a couple of these blanks. Part of our definition of generosity is going to feature this idea that we love God and we love others. Because this is the core of the gospel. Love God, love others. Now, I recognize when I start a topic like generosity, it's possible that the rest of this message could have a tinge of guilt to it. And I really don't want there to be any guilt to anything we talk about today, and I'll tell you why. Love is something that you have to give freely. Systems can make you follow rules, but love is something that you have to give freely. Now, it's commanded in the Old Testament, the first commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, and with all your strength. Love the Lord your God. That is a commandment, but it's something that can't be forced on you. It's something that you do have to choose for yourself. In fact, this is the power of the gospel. The power of the gospel is to say, love people, and there's nothing anyone can do to force you to love people. You have to make that decision for yourself. And so today, what we're talking about is something freely given, something from your heart, something that you want to do. We want to love God. And we want to love others. Now, if our heart hasn't been transformed by the gospel yet, or you're new to Christianity in some way, and new to church, it might be that at this point in time, you don't really want to love God or love others quite the same way that you see in the scriptures, perhaps. But I think there's a good chance that many of us do. We want to love God. We want to love others. Sometimes we're not quite sure the best way to do it, but in our heart, that's what we want. We want to love God. We want to love others. So this has to be part of our definition of generosity, because otherwise generosity could become a rule, and we don't want to make it a rule. So we're going to catch this early. Love is an important part of generosity. Now, I want to keep expanding this definition. In order to do that, I want to jump to a different passage. This is Matthew chapter 25. And this is something, another parable that Jesus is kind of talking about. He's talking about those who step in on behalf of others. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. We'll keep going. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Now this is a parable that Jesus is saying, but it's kind of indicative of what's going to happen sort of at the end of all things, that when God is looking for those who are coming into heaven, and he's kind of figuring out what it is that you did with your life, and Jesus is saying there's something about serving others that's the same as serving God. That when you serve other people, you are really doing it for God. Now, there's a whole second section of people here. So this is the group of people that really did. They stepped in. They fed the hungry. They were there visiting the sick or the imprisoned when they couldn't be other places in person. They stepped in. There's this whole group of other people who didn't do that after this passage, and their future is not that bright. But this group, they were so invested in others, they didn't even realize that they were serving Jesus in the process. It was just part of their heart. It was just part of their generosity. It's part of who they are. And as they're doing this, they demonstrate real acts of love. Love for them wasn't a feeling, right? When we say love for God and love for others, they're not feeling warm, happy, fuzzy thoughts about other people and about God. Their love is actually an action. It's something that's actually happening. If you were here a couple weeks ago, we had Steve Gomer from Partners come, and he represented a ministry on the other side of the world that's doing some incredible things for some really broken people. And if you were here that week, you heard Steve say this over and over again. This was that phrase that he wanted to make sure we didn't leave without hearing. He said, to love is to act. To love is to act. Because sometimes, even if our feelings aren't in it, even if we're not feeling particularly charitable toward other people or even toward God, when we take these actions, we're showing what we really believe, even if our feelings aren't there. Love at its root is an action. It's a posture. It's a movement toward people and toward God. And so we're going to include this in our definition of generosity as well, right? So far we've got that we love, there's a love for God and others, but these are specifically their acts of love for God and others. This isn't love as a feeling. This is love in action, and that's going to be part of our definition of generosity as well. All right, but there's one more crucial piece. I want us to see this, and this comes from 2 Samuel chapter 24. And in this verse, King David is dealing with the fact that there's a plague on the land, and he's had this conversation with God about what he's going to do, essentially, to kind of help with this plague. And so God gave him some parameters about how he could sacrifice and see this plague removed. So this conversation's already happened. David's already agreed to do this. The problem is he's away from home. He doesn't have his sort of sacrifice set up, if you will. And so he's got to create something on the fly. And so while he's out there, he sees that there's someone who has a threshing floor that would be great to build an altar on. And so he needs a place to do it, and he needs materials to sacrifice. So that's what he's trying to do. And he encounters this person who has these things, Arunah. And so he's going to ask Arunah to be able to buy these things so he can sacrifice them to God. Arunah, on his part, loves the king and loves God and is actually happy to give these things to David. David doesn't need to buy them. Arunah will give them to him. But this is David's response. But the king replied to Arunah, no, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen and paid 50 shekels of silver for them. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. It's one thing to make an offering to God, but it's another thing to make an offering that costs you something. Sometimes we're okay with the things that don't feel like they have a cost. We feel like we can come to worship and we can sing, and that doesn't necessarily come with a personal cost all the time. But if we're actually going to make a sacrificial offering, something that costs us, that's a different animal. And that's what makes generosity so unique, and so that's where I want to go with the rest of our definition. That besides just being acts of love for God and others, generosity is acts of love for God and others that cost you something. And this is going to be our working definition of generosity today. Generosity is acts of love for God and others that cost you something. Now, what I want to say is this. We know this. Dave talks about this all the time, but I also see it too. This is a generous church. We have really good data on, generally speaking, what people in the United States give financially, if we want to talk about the money piece of this. We have really good data about what Christians generally give, and yet Christians actually do give overall more than the rest of the population, practicing Christians. And we suspect that this church is actually even above the average for what Christians give. Now, we can't prove that empirically because we don't have that kind of data exactly, but I strongly suspect that based on what I know of so many of you. This church is generous. And so as we continue with this conversation, please don't hear me say anything but that. In many ways, I want to say thank you. Because this idea, acts of love for God and others that cost you something, I see so many of you doing this all the time. That you step in with other people and with God in ways that cost you something. And I don't just mean money. There's something else that's very valuable to us, and that's our time. I see so many of you sacrifice so much of your time for others, for this church. And it is a huge blessing every time I get to see it. And so it's kind of with thankfulness that I get to keep talking about this topic, because I've seen what it's done in each of your hearts who's chosen to be generous, and I want that for all of us. This is why I'm so passionate about this topic. When there's generosity, our hearts change, our life becomes different. And that is why we get to do this thing together, and that's why this is so fun. And generosity does. It takes so many different forms. I'm going to talk about time for a second. So generosity, one of the ways that you can be generous is simply with your time. It takes time to love others. It takes time to actually perform acts of love, right? In that Bible verse, when people were visiting others who were sick or visiting people in prison, that takes time. And time's a limited resource that each of us have. It's a sacrifice to actually show up for people. And it talked about this idea of feeding those who are hungry. Well, I mean, this church does that a lot. I know many of you sacrifice your time to make sure that food can be distributed here, distributed out to other churches, and food is available when people show up to our campus who are literally hungry. And that takes time. And you give that sacrificially. You know, as a junior high pastor, if I had a student who wanted to meet with me, sometimes I'd be a little bit begrudging about it because I know it would take time, right? You've got a student who's going through a crisis. You can't resolve that in 10 minutes. It's usually at least an hour conversation, or sometimes you find yourself in even a longer relationship. It takes time, but you do it because you know that God has called you to do something there with that sacrifice. It means something for that student. It does something in your own heart. I mean, just imagine what Christian community would look like if we never sacrificed our time. If none of us sacrificed any time for each other. When someone was sick in our church and we didn't make the time for them. If someone was hungry and we didn't make the time to give them food. Or even if we had ministries, but no one offered time to make those ministries work, they would collapse. Christian community, at its heart, it requires us to invest our time. Even in this culture, which has so many other ways of claiming our hours, when we invest our time, our community becomes robust. And we're actually doing something. We're demonstrating the acts of love that change not only our immediate community, but begin to have ripple effects across the world. Sacrificing our time creates something that has teeth to it. A Christian community that doesn't sacrifice time is a little bit like my gym tag, right? It's the same problem. If I don't give any time to the gym whatsoever, I do not grow. Christian communities do not grow when we do not spend time with them. We do not have our own hearts experience change. We don't get to help others experience change unless we invest that time. So that becomes extremely important. But generosity isn't simply time either. There is the money piece. And this is the one that's perhaps most controversial. This is the one where I know that for many of us, I feel you're going to feel like I'm most stepping on your toes today. And so that's not my intent. I want to talk about this again with that same spirit of generosity ultimately helps us grow closer to God and other people. But I do want to talk about it. There's actually this big debate that's been going on. So Barna, the same study that tracked how much people actually give, it actually asked this question. It asked the question, do you believe that instead of giving money, you can only give time? Like, can you swap generosity of finances for generosity of volunteering or time? And so they'd asked people this. And generally speaking, the Christian practicing Christians, 50% of them actually said yes to this question, 47 really. 47% said, it is okay for me simply to volunteer or give my time and not give my finances. They asked the same question to pastors. Only 1 in 10 said that was fine. And so I'm coming to you today saying I think that there's something wrong when we only give generosity in one way, because I think we only see part of the benefits of what a generous life is like. Now, I have to put some cards on the table, because the reality is when you hear a pastor talk about giving, there can be something that almost sounds self-serving about that. Here's what I mean. For one, as part of the pastoral staff here, I obviously am extremely invested in the financial health of our church. That's really important to me. Also, as one of the pastors here, along with many other pastors, I directly benefit from when you give financially to our church. My family does. Thank you for that, by the way. It's actually a huge blessing. It means I don't have to do other things to support my family. It means I can fully invest in this church, in this community, and what God is doing. It's a huge gift that you give us. And at any time if that gift was revoked, it wouldn't negate the fact that this has been a huge blessing for a long time. And so every year that you say, yeah, you know what, we're going to make it so that you can keep ministering and you don't have to provide for your family another way, it's a huge gift, so thank you for that. And so it is true that when you give, I directly benefit. And so maybe there feels like a conflict of interest here. It's also true that there are asks out there. And what I mean by asks are this. There's things that opportunities we're giving for you to give your money. One of them does have to do with this power of one thing. It's only one of the six things, but it is one of the six things, an extra gift during this season. And that's a step of generosity. So I know that those things are on the table, and so I want to acknowledge that they're there. Now, at the end of this, we're not going to take an extra offering or anything like that, so I'm not trying to trap you, but those things are still out there. They're real, because there are lots of opportunities, and I think that's a good thing. Okay, with all those cards on the table, I still want to say generosity, even with our finances, is important, because it does something to our heart. And this is where I have to work a little bit to maybe reshift the conversation a little bit. So for many of us, I know this, many of us have grown up with this idea that we give to God through giving to the church because it's a step of obedience. I look across this room and I've had conversations with many of you where you've said that exact thing to me. God is asking us to give back to him. And so out of obedience, I'm going to do just that. Thank you for your faithfulness. I mean, I love that. It's great. It's so simple. God asks us to give, I'm going to give. It's that simple. I love it. For many of us, and I'll say even people in my own generation, though, as simple as that should be, sometimes that hasn't always connected correctly. It makes all the sense in the world, and I believe it. If God has asked us to give, we should respond faithfully. And yet, sometimes giving is still really difficult. So here's the cool thing about the Bible. You see this in the Old Testament, but you see it in the Gospel as well. That when God asks us to take a step of obedience, we can do so trusting that God knows more than we do, but also we have the scriptures to tell us why that step of obedience is actually a good thing in the first place. Like you can actually go to the Bible and figure out why God's asking us to do that. And the answer almost always is that it has something to do with God working for our own good. It turns out that when we're obedient in generosity, it does something in our hearts for our own good. And so this step of obedience actually really is in our own interest. As we connect with God, we connect with others. And so I want to unpack that a little bit, because I know that generosity sometimes has been a confusing topic. So I want to talk about it in this way. And for this section, I'm really indebted to Tim Keller. If you've never read his book, Counterfeit Gods, it's really good. And this comes from part of that section. But one of the things that he identifies is that how we spend our money is actually very telling of who we are as people. And so he uses this passage. He talks about this particular passage in Scripture where we have Matthew chapter 6. It says this. This is on the Sermon on the Mount. Do not store up for yourselves treasure on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasure in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy. And where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. In this passage, Jesus is saying something about the way we spend our money. Now, I think treasure in this passage is actually even more than money, but it is minimally about money. Minimally. Later on in this passage, actually, Jesus will say you can't serve both God and money. How we actually deal with our personal treasures, our financial treasures, our possessions, actually has something to do with the condition of our heart. Now, for years, I read this passage this way, that the things that are important to me, that's where I'm going to spend my money, right? That's how I read this passage for years. It was Tim Keller who actually told me, and I finally realized he's right, that the ordering of the passage is actually different. Where you put your treasure, that's where your heart's going to be. He tells this story of a couple that had been recently married, and they were having some crisis because of finances. I mean, finances are one of the biggest things couples fight about, right? And so this particular fight had to do with a wife who spent a lot, she went shopping a lot, and a husband who was really sort of irritated by that. And so the husband was talking to Tim Keller saying, I can't believe my wife spends all this money and all of these things. I mean, I feel like she's just so materialistic. She's got all this stuff that's just way too important to her. And Tim Keller kind of takes it in, and he listens a little bit, and he asks, okay, well, how would you spend the money? He's like, well, I want to make sure that we're secure, that we're able to save enough for our future. Tim Keller goes, okay, all right. Your wife's idol might be stuff, but your idol's security. See, where we spend our money tells us something about our idols. Money itself can be an idol. It's possible for money to be an idol, but actually, usually it doesn't end up being an idol. Usually what money does is it points to where our idols are. Where we spend our money tends to be our idols. I'll give you one for me. There was a section of years, and I still have to be careful with this, where I spent way too much on technology. I got like really big into building computers. That is not a cheap hobby, by the way. And so I would go to Fry's or other places. I'd buy these computer components to make a really fun computer, sometimes, you know, going over $1,000 to build a computer. And then there's software that goes with this. There was like a three-year span where every year I built a new computer. It was getting ridiculous, right? To this day, I still can't really walk into Fry's without my wife holding my hand, making sure I don't wander too far. I do like technology, and I use it a lot in my life. It's actually really important to my job here and to other things that I do. Buying technology by itself isn't a bad thing. What I want to highlight is this. It is very easily an idol for me. Something that I really put my time, attention, and finances into it. And left unchecked, that can start to elevate in importance even over God. And that's what happens with idols. Generally speaking, the things that we spend our money on aren't bad in themselves, but when they become the thing that we invest our heart into, well, then they take the place of God. And whether it's stuff or security or something else, where we spend our money demonstrates what our idols are. So where we spend our money then becomes important, because check out this process. Where you put your money, that's where your heart follows. As in, it's very easy to correct this problem. Start dealing with your money in terms of the kingdom of God. Because when we start to place our money, our treasures, our actual possessions of worth into things that reflect the kingdom of God, our heart will follow that. And those idols that we make in other places of our life, they start to diminish in importance because our heart is now following the kingdom of God. If we don't do that, our heart will continue to follow all the other ways we spend our treasure, because that's just how it works as humans. Our heart follows our treasure over and over again. And so it's with that framework that I want us to actually think about generosity a little bit differently. Generosity is ultimately about our hearts. And where our heart lands, and what our heart is committed to. So when we're talking about finances then, giving back to God is actually an extremely important thing. Now, I know this for me. I'm just going to tell you from my own experience growing up. I know this is also true for people in my generation, but I also know this is true for people of all generations, some of the things I'm going to tell you. Sometimes giving, we get these weird roadblocks in our head. These things that make it difficult for us to actually respond faithfully in generosity. So I'm just going to give you two big ones for me that I happen to know is true for a lot of people. One is the actual mechanics of being generous with our treasures, and the other has to do with church itself and how we conceptualize church, all right? So if you'll permit me for a second, when we're talking about our treasure, one of the things that can be a little bit difficult, especially when we think about giving our money, is that we don't always know how to do it or how to do it correctly. What I mean is this. I grew up with this idea that you are supposed to tithe. A tithe is one-tenth of your income, right? Now, there's a fun debate in the Christian circles about whether or not the tithe is a commandment or a suggestion. But here's what I do want to tell you. Christians throughout the millennia have been using tithing as a baseline, and it's been particularly helpful. One-tenth of what you make in a year is given back to God. And I still think that's really true. Even if it's not quite a rule, it is very true that that tends to be a very helpful number for most people. That if we could simply conceptualize everything that we make in a year and dedicate 10% of that to God, that there's something significantly sacrificial about that, that also isn't overly burdensome. Now, for many people, because God's blessed them in other ways, actually that's too little of a number. And so I don't want us to get stuck in that 10% because God has maybe blessed you where 10% is almost nothing to you. And then it's not really a sacrifice at all. But for others, the idea of getting to the 10% is really hard. Like, that's a really big jump. We haven't gotten that far yet. Like, maybe we'll give a couple dollars in the offering plate every once in a while, but to go to 10% of our income, that's hard, especially if it's difficult to calculate. I remember as a student, that's when I was first trying to figure out how to give well. I was a college student, and I had a couple jobs, but the jobs, generally speaking, were scholarship-based, and so when I would make money from them, it went straight into my sort of college account, if you will. So what was actually happening, because I had loans, I was netting a negative amount every year, and so as I was trying to conceptualize tithing, it's like, what, when the offering plate comes by, I get to take 10% back out? Like, how does that work, right? When you're dealing with a 10% number, it's difficult, okay? Some of you are on fixed incomes, and it's really hard to figure out what to do with that 10%. Some of you have lost a job recently, and so how do you tithe when you don't have a source of income? And you know what can happen in those situations? And this happened to me as a student. You can actually feel really guilty about that because it feels like you're not measuring up. You know, there's this story in the New Testament, actually, where you have this widow who gives almost her entire possessions. And Jesus looks at this widow and says, you know, it's not the amount that you give that matters. It's the sacrifice you made to give it. And even though she gave almost nothing of dollar consequence, her heart was fully invested in it. And we get all the benefits of generosity from the size of the sacrifice, not the size of the dollar amount. And so when we're thinking about generosity, I want to keep tithing out there as a baseline, one-tenth. That's a good thing to shoot for. But if you're not there today, then I want us to think about giving generously in a different way, creatively perhaps. Maybe you have to choose a fixed amount where you don't even know where it comes from. Saying, somehow I'm going to give $50 this month. I don't even know where that $50 is, but I'm going to give it. I'm going to trust it. It's not a function. It's not a 10% of some number. But it's what God is asking me to give. And this is actually what you see in the New Testament, right? In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, this is what Paul says. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And this isn't about a rule. This is about generosity, changing my heart, tackling the greed and complacency in my own heart and moving it toward God, removing the other idols that exist in my life and moving my heart toward God. And so it's a cheerful process, no matter what the dollar amount ends up being. And this is a relationship between you and God. And so I would ask, God, what would you have me give? I'm going to guess it's probably more than zero. But even if it's a small step at first, I think there's something that happens in our heart when we actually trust God with our finances. And our life starts to look a little bit different because we said yes to what God is doing. It's about our hearts connected with God. Now, that's the mechanics. And another thing about the mechanics, too, this would happen to me sometimes. You know, once I actually did get in the rhythm of figuring out what a 10% would look like, this was at the time where I couldn't necessarily give on my phone or there wasn't a lot of online giving things, so you really did have to bring your checkbook with you to church. And I, like, never brought my checkbook. It was like the basic thing, right? The offering plate would be passed, like, oh, I forgot my checkbook again. Darn it. Okay, well, I'll just do it next week and I'll cover for the month. Well, after about 6 months of doing this, it's like my gym membership, right? I just never brought that thing. 6 months goes by, I haven't given a dime, and I always meant to, but I never actually brought the checkbook. And so here's what I'd say. When we're actually, as a church here, we have this corporate time of actually giving, and so some of you do write checks, that's great, keep doing that. But for those of you who aren't in the rhythm of that, when that happens, there are other ways to give that are put on the screen. Use one of those on the spot. Go to the Rose Drive website, type in the number, give during the offering time, because if you say, oh, I'll just do it when I get home, you will say that week after week, and it will never happen, because that's what happened to me. We have to get in the rhythm of doing it. So take the step and just jump straight in. All right, now that's the mechanics. So hopefully we can conceptualize. This is between you and God and just do it. All right, that's the quick mechanics of it. Don't worry about the rest of the numbers and just follow God's leading and just do it. But the other thing, and maybe this is more true in my generation than others, I don't know, I'm still trying to figure this out. But it seems like I have a lot of friends who have a hard time understanding why giving to the church is the same thing as giving to God. This is a conversation we have a lot, right? So generally when we speak about tithing, we're talking about giving to the church. And so for a lot of my friends, the question becomes, okay, but can't I also faithfully give to God by giving to charities? A nonprofit that's doing something great in the world. Isn't that also a way that I am following God and being obedient and doing what God has asked me to? And the answer is a little bit complicated. I think the answer is sort of. If God is asking you to be generous to something besides your church community, then out of obedience and out of faithfulness, show that generosity wherever God is leading you. I think that's a really important thing. And Christians overall, why we tend to be way more generous on a dollar amount or percentage base, we're not always more generous with organizations besides the church. Sometimes, but not always. If there's something that's got your heart, something you want your heart to be invested in and is outside of what we do in this place, and God's calling you to that, be obedient. And go for it. But I'm going to do something that we almost never talk about. I'm going to tell you why you should actually give to your church community. Why giving to the church community is actually important. So here it goes. Where your treasure is, there your heart is. If your treasure is not invested in your church community, where is your heart? part of the reason we come together and we pool our finances in this generous act of giving even our money is because it puts our hearts together with each other. We're aligned. There's trust involved in taking money that you earn, that you work hard for, and giving it over to a group of people as large as our church, because you know you probably don't get to decide where that money is going. You have a voice. You're part of our community. You want to hear that voice about how we spend all of the resources that God has pulled together here at our church. But you personally don't necessarily get to decide where it goes. See, it goes against our giving mentality a little bit. I know for a lot of my friends, if they give to an organization, they want to know exactly where that money is going. Sure, I'll give you $50 if I know it's going to a goat for some family in Africa. That's fine. I know where the money's going. But if I don't know where the money is going, then I don't want to give it. So there is an act of trust in giving to your Christian community. See, I believe that all of us together, doing this thing together, has greater impact than simply me buying a goat. That there is something incredible that happens when we pool our money together and God multiplies it in ways that completely blow our minds. And we do that as a community. And in the process, our heart is there. And that's sometimes why that dollar amount isn't quite as consequential. I mean, I know if you're a high school student even, it might be hard to figure out how much to give, but even if you were to give $5 a week, now your heart is invested in what we're doing here as a church. And you're part of who we are. And it grows us together as a community, and it grows our heart for one another. And so by giving to our own community, we're loving God and loving each other, and we're allowing that love to go out and bless our community and this world. It is a beautiful, sacred act that God has given the church, that in being generous with each other and with God, He takes what we bring to the table and multiplies it in ways that we can never understand. And in the process, our heart grows for God and for our community around us. It's beautiful. That's why I have no reservations about talking about generosity today. It's one of the biggest things you can do for your spiritual growth, both with other Christians and with God. It's huge. Before I said, can you swap the time and money thing? That was a discussion that they had. So Barna said that 47% of practicing Christians said, yes, it's fine to swap the money piece with volunteering. Well, here's what turns out to be the case. Barna also charted who spends the most time volunteering and who gives the most. And they rise like this. What I mean by that is this basic quote that Barna says at the end here. In other words, Christians prone to participate in one type of giving aren't looking to get a pass on the other. Whether giving of money or of time, generous Christians are simply generous. That as we take steps of generosity, be it our time or our money, our capacity for generosity grows, and we desire to be even more generous. So people don't typically choose. They grow. And as they grow, God does something amazing in them. And we'll go back to our definition of generosity for a second. This is what we kind of all came with together. And as I kind of wrap this up, I'm going to let the praise band come back up because we're gonna spend some time worshiping together as we wrap up here. Generosity is acts of love for God and others that cost you something. It's a step of faith. It's a sacrifice. And it takes effort on our part. And yet, God meets us there. He grows our hearts. And He grows are trusting each other and with God. I remember once I was part of a small group of Christians. We were kind of living together and trying to figure things out. And we had this issue of we all had really busy schedules, but we decided to invest our time. And we all sometimes had a lot of things that were pulling our money, but there were situations where people in the group, they needed a little bit of help some weeks, and we'd pull together our money to make that happen. And by investing our time and our money into just that little group of Christians, we all found each other growing exponentially in our relationship with others and with God. And I know this applies on the large scale. That as we enter into generosity, God meets us. He grows our capacity for generosity. He grows our heart toward Him and toward our church community. And that is why generous Christians have the capacity to have something that's much more than a tag on a keychain, but to participate in a Christian community that really does have the power to transform our communities and the world. God, today I pray that You would make us into a generous people, even more generous than we already are. I am so thankful for those who have taken these steps of generosity, who surrendered their heart to you through their time and through their money. They've sacrificed something out of acts of love. And God, I pray that we would take even more steps. And for those of us who haven't done that very much, I pray, God, that you give us the courage to make the sacrifice, to trust you with our resources, to see what you do in our lives and the lives of the people around us. So in your name we pray, amen.